This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Glynis Board. This morning, we're taking time to remember some lost loved ones and the important messages they leave behind.
Show the people that war is nothing but hell and destruction. Let's teach the young ones this is what you're going to encounter if you don't do something about it. Let's get some school. Let's get some universities. Get clubs running. War will not solve the international problems. We need something else.
That's coming up. This is West Virginia Morning. West Virginia Governor Jim Justice says the state's hospitalization rates are up 10% since Friday because of the coronavirus, and more than 6,800 people are currently active with the disease. Rates are spiking in southern West Virginia, where Justice says people are continuing to visit and bring the virus back from Myrtle Beach. 31 people at Princeton Nursing Home have also now tested positive. 19 of them are hospitalized. Two hospitals, Appalachian Regional in Beckley and Logan General, are also experiencing outbreaks internally. Justice says DHHR and National Guard and FEMA are preparing for a continued spike in cases by preparing St. Francis Hospital in Charleston as a COVID surge hospital with additional beds. Despite the increase, Justice says West Virginia continues to have significantly lower rates of the virus than surrounding states. More than 3,500 people have died from COVID-19 in Kentucky and Indiana, according to state data. And of course, these deaths are more than just numbers. So today we'll learn about a man in Kentucky who died from the virus in April. His name was Lawrence Keene. His daughter, Katie Keene Churchman, shares this remembrance.
He was the single most influential person in my life. He was gentle. He was very humble. Extremely patient. He was so patient that when he decided that he wanted to marry my mother, he waited 7 years and asked her 2 times. She always was very independent and still is. And she remembers him saying, "Bonnie, I don't want your independence. I just want you." And he waited and he waited and he didn't give up. He loved to dance. He loved to dance. And his favorite band was the Beatles. 1, 2, 3, 4. My mom would never want to dance with him because he was the worst dancer. It was like a shuffle. He shuffled a lot, kind of. But he did not care. And I love that. So I always danced with him. I was his dance partner. He would always take us to school. I remember riding in his truck and we'd stop at the little gas station down the street. And if it was cold out and the windows were fogged on the side, he would take his ice scraper and scrape the little smiley face in my window. He was a true craftsman. He was a stained glass artist. His biggest accomplishment was the stained glass window that is behind the altar in my parents' church. He built my parents' house. And I asked him, "How did you know how to do all this?" And he said, "Well, whatever I didn't know, I just read it in a book." He was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease when he was 41, but he did all of those things, the stained glass window for the church and everything, after having been diagnosed with Parkinson's. He loved being with his grandkids. And, you know, in the last couple years, it was getting harder for him to express that. With Parkinson's, your muscles start freezing. You're not able to use expressions on your face as much. But mom always would comment that even when you thought you couldn't get a smile, he saved his biggest smiles for his grandkids. And they're little ones, and they would climb all over him. He would be in his wheelchair, and they would just climb up and, "Let's go for a ride, Paul." They called him Paul. We felt fortunate to be able to see him when he was in the hospital with COVID-19 because he was in hospice and he had, it was like a patio home kind of setup where we could sit on the other side of the glass door and we could at least see him. I believe that the hardest part about that part of it anyway was seeing his hand laying there on his chest and not being able to reach through and take it, and seeing his head and wanting to brush his hair, you know, over to the side and not being able to do that. That was really hard. I believe that God gave him the grace to know that we were there for him and that our hearts were connected. I will say that I want to be like my dad when I grow up. I only wish I could be like him as a parent and as a person. Though some have changed, some forever,
not for better. If you've lost a family member or a close friend to the coronavirus and you'd like to share their story, we'd like to help. You can find more information on our website, wvpublic.org. I love you more. We'd like to take a moment now to remember another friend. He didn't die of COVID-19, but Eddie Jackford, a longtime resident of Wellsburg in Brook County, recently passed away in a VA hospital in Tampa, Florida. He was a World War II veteran who helped create the American Defenders of Bataan and Corregidor Museum. Jackford enlisted in the Army Air Corps when he was 18 in September 1940. He became an aircraft mechanic for the Army Air Corps. Here's a feature we produced a few years ago about him and the museum he helped launch in the Northern Panhandle.
You are examining right now the largest collections of artifacts, memorabilia, photographs, and documents relating to what happened in the Philippine Islands in 1941 through 1945 till the end of the war. And we have
That's Edward Jackford, a Wellsburg native. He's describing the American Defenders of Bataan and Corregidor Museum that began when he donated his memorabilia to the Brook County Library in 2002. Since then, other donations from other POWs have poured in.
That's just out of this world. It'll take her 5 years to really card all these documents she's getting.
On September 11th, 1940, Jackford enlisted in the United States Army Air Corps, and soon he was assigned to serve as an airplane mechanic on the Philippine Islands in June 1941. He was 19 years old.
We were sacrificed and abandoned in the Philippines. We were. 19,000 Americans, troops in there. We were abandoned.
Jackford vividly remembers the days, months, and years that followed the 1941 December invasion of the Philippine Islands by the Japanese.
We were told about World War II happening in Japan and that they had bombed Pearl Harbor. So I went down to the plane, I come back for lunch, and as I came out of the lunch room, we heard a group of airplanes. And we looked up and someone said, those are naval planes. Someone said, naval hell, they're Japanese.
Soon after, Jackford and so many others surrendered. They were without provisions, food, or military support. From there, it was on to the Bataan Death March, or what Jackford experienced, the hell ships.
October the 9th, as we were going toward Taiwan, I was on top of the deck of the ship, and someone hollered, torpedoes. And I looked out in the bunker, there's two torpedoes come right at our ship. And the captain of the ship turned the ship right toward the torpedoes. The torpedoes spanned the ship, one on each side.
Not everyone was so lucky. Well, luck being a matter of your point of view. Air attacks or submarines sank at least 25 of these ships. Inside, POWs were stored in the hulls without facilities or fresh water. They subsisted on scraps, urine, and blood. The very desperate resorted to drinking bilge water. Many expired. Survivors continued on to labor camps.
They made us get into a formation of line of fours and walk through the streets. The streets were lined with Japanese women and Japanese men and Japanese kids. The kids were throwing stones at us. And we held our heads up high and marched straight down the street about 3 miles to a place called Mitsui. And there were big warehouses there. And they had an abandoned office building that they had turned into a POW camp. And that was our quarters for until July the 25th of 1945.
Jack Furt worked in a variety of fields over the following years, sometimes carrying rice, sometimes unloading coal. Sometimes the work was heavy, other times the work carried heavy implications.
We were assigned initially at the Nippon Steel Company. We helped them manufacture steel, which would be made to in ships and so forth, and tanks, which would be used against our troops. So this is what we were forced to do. There's nothing we could do about it. We were working in armaments to assist the Japanese in fighting against Americans. And this really hurt us. It was hard to get over.
In November of 1944, events changed much to the hope and horror of Jack Furt and his friends.
We all ran up on top of the deck and we looked down toward Tokyo, and there was a B-29 making pictures of Tokyo. That's the first airplane in that area, would be November the 1st, 1944. Of course, that was a bad omen for us, too. It was good and bad, because shortly after that, we were bombed almost every night, every night.
8 months later, in July, they were hit. Jack Furt is haunted by the memories of digging out suffocated men and collecting the limbs of his comrades. Then in August, they were rescued. Jack Furt pointed to a picture on display in the museum of a ship with a red cross on it.
See that red ship, right? That red cross ship there?
Mm-hmm.
We saw it sitting out in the way, and they were that's where they were taking us. But what we saw the flag. If anything ever hurt you, to make you tears come to your eyes, that did. The red, white, and blue of the flag, the United States flag again.
19,000 were taken prisoner. 16,000 returned home. Half of those died within the first 10 years of being home. Today, less than 500 survivors are still alive. The Brook County Library will dedicate new shelves in the museum in recognition of POW/MIA Day, with a collection of over 1.5 million artifacts, documents, and photographs, and oral histories. The American Defenders of Bataan and Corregidor Museum has become a center for research. Eddie Jack Furt says he only hopes that someone will learn something from all this suffering.
Show the people that war is nothing but hell and destruction. Let's teach the young ones this is what you're going to encounter if you don't do something about it. Let's get some schools, let's get some universities, get clubs running. That war will not solve the international problems. We need something else.
That was World War II veteran Eddie Jack Furt. He passed away July 24th. Since that story aired in 2013, there have been some developments at the American Defenders of Bataan Corregidor Museum. In 2015, officials from Mitsubishi Materials, a subsidiary of which Jack Furt was forced to work during the war, came to Wellsburg to publicly apologize to him and to make a $50,000 donation for educational programs offered by the museum. In 2017, construction began on a 4,500-square-foot expansion, which was completed and dedicated at the museum the following year. Jack Furt is survived by his wife of 73 years, Henrietta Jack Furt, as well as their children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren, and numerous nieces, nephews, and their families. Oh, and one of his grandsons is composer Matt Jack Furt, who composed the theme music for West Virginia Morning. So we're a little extra grateful to Eddie and all his grit, resilience, and legacies. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Andrea Billups is our news director. I'm your host and producer, Glynis Board. This is West Virginia Morning.